We turn our attention to Congress. Yesterday, the U.S. Senate voted to bypass a filibuster as a two-year federal budget deal inched toward final passage. And as we just heard, they voted to approve that deal this afternoon.
After years of political gridlock resulting in sequesters and government shutdowns in the past, how'd we get to the deal?
Philip Joyce joins us now. He's a professor of management, finance, and leadership at the Maryland School of Public Policy. Philip, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much. It's good to be with you.
Well, 2 months ago, gridlock and a government shutdown, who would have thought that there'd be a compromise deal passed by the Congress just 2 months later?
Yes, well, there might not have been one if it hadn't been for gridlock and a government shutdown. I think the most significant reason that we have an agreement today is that enough people figured out that it wasn't in their political interest to have yet another last-minute showdown, much less another government shutdown. The other thing I think we have to keep in mind is that while this is significant in the sense that people reached an agreement, it's a pretty small agreement. So a lot of the things that people would have gotten a lot of heartburn about, like tax reform and major entitlement reform, are just not in here. So it doesn't mean that there aren't things that some people don't like. There just aren't enough things that enough people don't like to keep it ultimately from happening.
We've heard the phrase grand bargain brought up on and off over the last couple few years. Really, this is not a grand bargain by any stretch of the imagination, is it?
No, this is a teeny tiny bargain. A grand bargain would be something where we had done something to affect the long-term trajectory of the deficit, and that would invariably mean, something that most people in Washington call tax reform, but that really means increasing taxes on people and major entitlement reform. You just can't get enough money out of the appropriated part of the budget to make a significant dent. And the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, which is kind of a grand bargain advocacy group, estimated that the result of this would mean that by 2030, that is the result of this agreement that we just reached, instead of the debt being 78.9% of GDP, the deficit, or the debt rather, would be 78.7% of GDP. So this is really, it's a step in the right direction, but it's by no means the grand bargain. If there's going to be a grand bargain, it's still somewhere ahead of us.
The last political hurdle was really yesterday on that filibuster vote, and a number of Republicans in the Senate actually joined the procedural vote to pass this through to get that vote today.
Right.
Were you surprised that I think it was a dozen Republicans voted to not have the filibuster?
I was somewhat surprised, although, there are a number of Republicans, especially in the Senate historically, but increasingly maybe even a few in the House, that have grown tired of this and have been looking for bipartisan solutions of some kind. The other thing, I was looking through the list of Republicans who voted for it, and I was trying to line it up with when these people are actually going to be up for re-election. And of the people who voted for the motion to continue debate, there are really only two of them that are running for re-election in 2014. The only two who voted for it who are running for re-election in 2014 are Lamar Alexander from Tennessee and Susan Collins from Maine. And certainly they didn't make their political lives any easier by doing this, but the other people who voted for it are either people who are retiring, who aren't going to run for election again, or they're people who aren't going to run for re-election until at least 2016, and that's a long time from now, and lots of things can happen between now and then. So a little bit surprised, but not really shocked.
And the way this shook out, a couple of Senate Republicans who are facing Tea Party challenges, most notably Mitch McConnell, got to have it both ways a little bit. They got to make their vote, in effect, against passing this thing for a filibuster that didn't happen. So they could say, look, I voted against this budget compromise, but they still got the budget compromise.
Correct. And it's true in a lot of votes in Congress that there are people who might be willing to vote for something that's not in their political interest if their vote is needed. But clearly, the vote was not needed here. I mean, the vote yesterday was 67-33. The vote today was 64-36. So both of those votes were comfortable votes, meaning it passed by a comfortable margin. And I think you're correct that even the people who might in their heart of hearts not be desiring another government shutdown didn't necessarily have to vote for this.
So we've had so many conversations over the last bunch of years, really, about brinksmanship, about taking it up to this fiscal cliff deadline or that budget deadline where we've got looming disaster in October. We went over the deadline. Do you think that that's going to change? We're not going to be running up to deadlines. Is today's vote a sign of things to come?
Well, look, I would say this is success. I mean, it might only be success relative to the low expectations that we've developed for Washington, but any time that the Congress doesn't do the smallest thing possible at the last possible minute, we should at least pause for a second and recognize that something unusual, if not significant, has happened. And I think it may matter politically because it's a small indication that the parties can work together. I mean, I was one of the people that when they said, you know, Paul Ryan and Patty Murray are going to get together and they're going to try to hammer this out, I wasn't real hopeful. And even though it's a small deal, I think that once people get used to working together, maybe they'll work together on larger things. I didn't realize until a colleague of mine pointed it out that that the last time we had a conference agreement on the budget resolution, and while technically this isn't quite that, that was the framework, that is the reasons Senator Murray and Congressman Ryan were coming together is because they're chairs of the budget committee. The last time that we had an agreement on the budget resolution when the House and Senate were controlled by different parties was 1986.
Wow.
And so that's significant when you think about exactly how partisan things have gotten. And it might be a case where we really had to kind of go past the brink in order for people to realize that they don't really want to go there again, even if the only reason they don't want to go there again is political.
So they don't get the blame for going there again. Well, we've got we can put it to the test, this new bipartisanship. There's a new deadline. Is it next month already on debt ceiling? What are the politics leading up to that?
Well, I don't think the debt ceiling deadline is yet next month. I think the most immediate deadline is going to be that while this established the framework for the appropriation bills, they haven't actually passed the appropriation bills. The continuing resolution expires on January the 15th. So by January the 15th, they have to be able to reach agreement on the actual appropriation bills. I think that's likely given this agreement, because I think the big hang-up was what's the number going to be, not what are the details going to be. The estimate on when we hit the debt ceiling is kind of all over the place, but most people say not before March, and if we get past that, it turns out April 15th is kind of a significant date for federal fiscal future, because a whole lot of tax revenue comes in on or around that day. So if we don't hit the debt ceiling by March, it might not be until May or June, but it is going to happen, and there's nothing about this deal that they passed today that deals with raising that debt ceiling. So this will be another opportunity if the Republicans want to try to use the debt ceiling as a bargaining chip, as they have tried to do before, where they might try to get some concessions on some larger things. But having said that, I think they sort of showed in the fall that they are not really willing to let us default on our debt, and I think the president now knows that they're not really willing to let us default on our debt, which they shouldn't be. So the question of how much they can use that as a bargaining chip, I think, is sort of up in the air.
We'll keep an eye on that as it develops. Philip, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, I appreciate it very much.
That was Philip Joyce. He's a professor of management, finance, and leadership at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy.